Today on The Breakdown, heads up for the title, $400,000 waiting for you. But there's a problem. That's not Snoopy in that little biplane shooting at you. That's the Red Baron himself, Isaac Baron. He's coming at you. He's doing a nosedive. Will he crash into the firmament in a fiery blaze? Or will he bring you down? I don't know. It's completely unclear. But this is actually about a poker hand that he and Bruno Volkmann played when they were heads up for all this money in a GG Poker online event. And it is fascinating. There's a lot of craziness, some unusual plays as well. Let's get into it right now on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, first time, no rehearsal.
I think the Red Baron thing with Isaac Baron's name, that was good.
Thanks.
But then firmament?
Yeah.
Crash into the firmament?
Sure, why not?
Is that the word you meant to say?
I mean, the concretement? No, the firmament, of course, is the sky. But it sounds like it could be hard. Doesn't it?
Because it's firm.
Yeah, the firmament. You can crash into the firmament. Also, other corporal beings might crash into the firmament regularly.
Yeah, spirits and geists and whatnot.
Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah, think geists. About the geists.
What do you mean, geists?
You think Poulter is the only kind of geist?
Oh. What are the other kind of geists?
Anter.
Anter.
Antergeist.
What would an antergeist be?
It's like a poltergeist, except it's got antlers.
And a poltergeist, is that like a particular kind of geist, or is that just the long name for a geist? That's my question.
I think it's the kind that likes Poulter.
Which is, you know, I'm not a big fan of it, but like if you want to put cheese on your fries,
yeah,
that's
fine. Yeah, I mean, like you can have Poulter.
I just always went with that. There was a movie that came out. Have you ever heard of it?
Poltergeist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
I know.
Do you know who directed it?
James Dean.
Steven Spielberg.
Oh, shit.
It's a classic.
The Spielberg.
It's a great movie. The guy who was in Coach.
Yeah.
He's
Craig T. Nelson?
Yeah, he's the lead. He's the
that
main
guy carries a movie? How?
Well, Steven Spielberg's delightful directing really carries the movie, is what happens. But, you know, it's an example of, you know, a masterclass in well-made film. Anyway,
did you get scared? Did you shake in your boots?
I think I saw it as an adult, and it isn't really scary as an adult, but it's well done. It's like fun and good. But the point is a poltergeist like a? I know someone's going to respond to this.
Yeah, I have no idea. Any answer that I make is going to be made up, but I'll answer anyway.
Great. Is it like a home geist? Like I'm a ghost who lives here, or is it more like a? Because like in that movie anyway, the reason why it all happened is it was like on an ancient Native American burial ground where they like had built their home and all that, and that was the problem. So is it like you've disturbed the sleep of the righteous kind of a ghost or what?
And does the righteous become violent in the afterlife?
I mean, they get pissed, apparently.
So are they really righteous then?
Well, they were righteous, and now they get to kill you.
That's the benefit of being righteous when you're alive. You get to kill everybody you want once you die.
Yeah, you know, you lay your sleeping bag on this ground, which no one knew is where I lived, but like I once lived and now have died and been buried. But I'm holding you responsible for it and killing you for it. That is unfair now.
Doesn't seem like a very logical geist. A poltergeist is a very emotional geist. You know, got a lot of hormonal stuff going on.
Huh.
And that is the polter part of it.
I will say that actually, both in Poltergeist and in most ghost movies, there is an escalation, right? It isn't like the ghosts start trying to kill you. They first like let you know they're there. They like knock some stuff over. Like in Poltergeist, they take all the chairs around the table and put and like build them into sort of a structure on top of the table, like instantly, and like you look away and you look back and it's all built up. Like that's really cool. So the ghosts actually are saying like, get out, get out. They usually do that before they start to kill you. So like, please leave, and you don't listen. I am supernatural. Please leave, and still they don't listen. And then you're like, now I have to kill you. Then you know what? The ghosts are fine. It's not the ghost's fault.
But why? Why can't the ghosts cohabitate with their younger counterparts?
I mean, what? Are you talking? First of all, younger counterparts. Wow, ageist much, Grant? Oh, ghosts should be allowed to do whatever they want because they're old. How dare you? That's exactly opposite of what you said, of course. First of all, they may experience spatial relations differently than we do as a Geist. Wouldn't you say? So, like,
I guess that's possible. I guess we could just throw any bullshit on it that we want.
Thank you. Yeah. But you're assuming, though, that the laws of the physical laws of nature, certain ones apply to them when you know other ones don't. That
why
seems weird.
Why is that the case?
What do you mean? You just talking about space.
With any other entity that you can interact with, all of the same laws of nature apply. And all of a sudden, there's this fucking other thing that exists, and the laws of nature no longer apply?
First of all, what are you talking about? All the laws of nature apply. That's crazy.
To every other entity that you interact with.
Why, yeah.
That's besides just, besides this other one.
You realize how bad you sound right now?
No. Okay, so then there's this other entity, which you do interact with in the same way that you interact with other things, and that you see it, potentially hear it, stuff like that. See the impact of its movement.
You know,
but the laws of nature somehow don't apply for reasons because we want them not to? Fuck you, Steven Spielberg. Go to hell.
Here's what I want to say in response to that. Okay. I do have a response. I shouldn't have used the term laws of nature. It's a term of art. That's a poorly phrased. I shouldn't have said that.
Isaac Newton is upset.
I shouldn't have said that. You're right. The laws of nature are the laws of nature. They're unbreakable as far as
even by a Geist, even if it's poultry.
Well, they would be part of nature.
Of course they would.
You
fool.
So I acknowledge that. I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, before man knew there were birds, man probably assumed nothing could fly.
What do you mean before man knew there were birds? Man always knew there were birds.
I'm working on a theory here.
Did it require 18th century technology to finally see birds? Like, what are you talking about?
There are some men who did not see birds until, you know, later on in life, right?
But as a species, we were aware of birds.
But before we were aware of them, there was some point, you must acknowledge, when man as a species was not aware of them, right?
Is this what debating Ben Shapiro is like? Is that what that is?
Am I wrong, though, at some point?
What? Okay, say it again.
At some point.
Yeah.
In the timeline of the species of humanity, at some point, it might have been pretty early, humanity was not aware of birds.
Disagree.
So you think the first human was immediately aware of birds upon breathing.
I think
because that's the only other
option. We're entering a new debate and or knowledge gap of yours.
Yeah.
Do you think the first human just kind of popped up and existed, or do you think it was a very slow evolution from other creatures?
Oh, no. Even if we go slow evolution.
So when's the breaking point in which it becomes a human?
Who cares? Whenever you decide that line is. I don't care. You can pick the line yourself. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Whenever the first human existed, at whatever point in whatever way we got there.
So probably it was born, whatever the first.
I'm going to say it was born.
Yeah.
So do you think the baby just knew about birds? Because that's a dumb thing to say.
I guess you got me, Ben Shapiro.
I think I did. So at what age did the baby become aware of birds?
Probably 4 months or something.
4 months?
They could see a thing flying
around.
First
of all, that baby's getting killed and eaten all the time. There are no other humans to protect it. That baby's screwed.
Well, it has parents. They're just not technically human.
Yeah, I know. I know, but they're going to eat it too. Are they aware of birds?
Yes! Of course they are.
But my point is more about, you know, flight than birds.
Of course it is. That's a really, you know what? Well-reasoned argument.
I win again!
Yeah, congratulations.
All right, let's move on. That was fun.
That was the most nonsense I've ever heard in my life. Poltergeist. All right.
You were saying that the space thing, that was absurd, though.
What space thing?
Oh, the ghosts may not, like, why can't they share space with humans? I'm saying maybe ghosts experience space differently than humans. Maybe they're bigger than you think, you know? That could be true, and that doesn't have to break any laws of nature, right?
What do you mean they're bigger than I think?
Well, you're talking like in the house.
Yeah.
Why can't the ghosts coexist with the humans?
Yeah.
What if the ghosts are taking up almost all of the space anyway in the house?
So you think you're a human and you die and you become like a 40-foot tall ghost?
Oh, because you know how it works.
I mean, that's not what I would expect, but I guess it's possible. Is that what fucking Ron Howard or whoever was positing in that movie, Steven Spielberg?
Ron Howard. I guess he became a successful director in his own right.
Did Steven Spielberg, when he was dreaming up his scenes for the movie, he was like, you know what? It may not be clear to the audience, but when I'm directing this, I'm thinking of this poltergeist as 40 feet tall. It's taking up this whole house.
I don't think
that's the
true.
Reason it wants the people to leave, because it's uncomfortable due to space constraints, because it's enormous.
See, but
I'm Steven Spielberg. These are my thoughts.
But see how you've just switched the tracks pretty hard. Your original thesis was the reason why the ghosts... Well, it's crazy that ghosts couldn't just share their space. And I'm like, well, what if the ghosts were bigger than you
say
think?
It was
and
crazy.
Now you're like, what a dumb idea. Like,
I didn't say it was crazy.
It's unbelievable.
I didn't say it was crazy. I was just asking the question, can't the ghosts share the space? Do they have to be cantankerous old fucks? Or can they share the space a little bit? Have a little bit of love in your heart.
And there you go with the ageism again. I can't believe how much time we spent on this. This is new. This is exciting.
This is a new frontier.
We're 22 minutes into the show.
Excellent.
No, we're not. We're not.
Oh, we've done 22 minutes on shit like that before.
Not very often.
No.
And we have not this time either.
All right, we'll get to the hand.
Fine.
Okay, this hand was suggested by Andres Korn on Twitter.
I believe that is World Series of Poker champion Andres Korn.
I mean, not main event, but he did win a 5K event bracelet.
That's a champion.
Certainly makes him, if not the most, among the most accomplished of our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Not the most. Actually, I can think of some of our other listeners who are even more accomplished. But
oh, yeah,
still.
Of course. Some people who listen to things that are specifically about them, at least.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. When you start to do that, then we have a pretty wide variety of
we've gotten feedback from some of the best players in the world. They're more accomplished.
I mean, we have like probably two of the top five earners of all time, I think, have like listened to multiple episodes of this podcast. Like confirmed, right? I can't think of who they are. That said... Still, Andres Korn, I should say. No, I should just call him by his last
Korn.
name. he's, we believe, a regular listener, which is not true necessarily for the Daniel DeGrounders of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Anyway, we're in this online tournament. By the way, if you want to suggest, do it on Twitter. We are the Poker Guys. Include a link or a hand description and make sure you timestamp it if it's a link, et cetera.
Et cetera.
All right. Heads up.
Okay, here we go.
Second's 318K, first is 412. Isaac Baron is the known entity here.
The Red Baron.
Yeah, he's got $6.5 million in live career winnings, and that doesn't include his online stuff, which he's known as an online player.
That's where he came from, yeah. So he's always been kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Red haired, crimson leashed.
Leashed? He's leashed?
Crimson leashed Isaac Baron. Everyone calls him that on, you know, in Pocket Fives. It smells. Let's go.
All right. Anyway, so Isaac Baron is in the hand. He's against Bruno Volkmann, who is not as accomplished, but has about $1 million in live earnings and probably some online stuff too, I would guess.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. All right. So Volkmann is the effective stack. He's got $7.3 million at the 140K blind level. So we're pretty deep here. We're at 50 blinds effective.
Cool.
He's going to open the action from the small blind slash button with 7-8 off. He's going to make it 322K. Isaac Baron has 12.8 million in the big blind, so approaching 100 bigs. Nice stack. He's got ace of spades, nine of diamonds. What's your strategy with ace of spades, nine of diamonds in this spot?
At this stack depth, I mostly want to call.
Yeah, protect your range.
Protect my range. I can't, like, if I get four bet, I have to fold this and, you know, it sucks. Then I'm like, turn a value hand into a bluff. I hate that.
You have to have some hands that you're okay with that, though.
No question. But like, we could do that with worse aces if we wanted to. We can do that with worse kings. Honestly, like king nine, king eight, those are hands we could do it with too. Although those also play very well as a call.
Sure.
But we want to have some, of course, three bets.
Yeah.
Also, my three bets, I think I mostly want to be a little bit more suited than not. If I could pick, it just gives me more options.
Well, I would like all of my hands to be more suited than not.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if I'm going to pick stuff like that, because then I have more opportunities to barrel profitably later on.
Sure.
But mostly I just want to call when we're this
deep. I challenge your suitedness premise. You got me all in cantankerous. I'm cantankerous ghost man now.
Yeah, and you're huge.
Yeah, I'm 40 feet tall. Yeah. Okay, anyway, continue.
About what?
Ace nine.
Yeah, I mostly like a call here when we're this deep.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Me too. That's what Isaac the Red Baron does.
I mean, just to be clear, I guess I want to say one more thing about it, which is when we flop an ace specifically, our opponent is often going to put in almost always put in one street of value and usually put in multiple streets.
Yeah, maybe two is likely and three is possible.
Yeah, and so like we can just put him in a spot where he just goes barrel, 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 because that board is, quote, better for him, and we just get to call it down and win a big pot.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that.
I love it, too.
Yeah.
So does Isaac.
Cool.
He calls. The pot is 679,000. The flop is ace of clubs, eight of clubs, jack of diamonds. So Bruno has made bottom pair, no kicker. Isaac has made top pair, kind of no kicker.
Yeah.
This is where things start to get a little poltergeisty, you know?
Yeah.
Chairs on top of tables and shit.
They're here.
Yeah, that's from that movie, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Isaac checks. All right, Bruno, what you doing? What do you want to do if you're Bruno?
I like betting.
You do? Just why?
We're just protecting equity.
Against what?
Against all the overcards. And
so king, queen, king, 10, queen, 10, eight, seven, nine.
I mean, there's a lot more than that, right? How about like king three?
Yeah.
You know, like there's a million like weird like one overcard thing that's going to come. We're not going to know where we are. It's like, you know, I think I like betting here. We often have the best hand. We just protect equity. I think it's fine. What do you think?
Sure, it's fine. We're never getting value from a worse hand.
But never.
But that's fine, I guess.
Never, never, never.
I guess to his credit, he bets small, which is, you know, that's what you should do in a case like that. Although, with a range advantage and a relatively wet board, maybe he should bet a little bigger from a game theory perspective. But it's okay.
I think with a range advantage on the flop, we want to bet smaller. The wet board makes you want to bet a little more.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Anyway, here's where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
We're going to have to discuss this one.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
Isaac is going to check raise his ace 9, ace jack 8. He doesn't have any sort of flush draw or anything, to 680K.
Yeah.
Okay. Describe his thought process. What's going on here?
It's plentiful, it's bountiful, it's flowery, and it's full of good tidings.
You're doing a bad job.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
You want to take another shot at it?
Fucking honest.
Yeah.
Truth time.
Yeah, welcome apparently. To the Truth Tellers.
Okay.
With Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
I like it, but I hate it.
Your elbows are terrible. Oh, sorry.
Well, I know. This is what we're doing
okay,
now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Isaac is check raising here. Does that mean Isaac is just check raising a lot on this board?
Or in general?
In general, yeah. So he's like, I'm getting called by worse. It just seems like you open yourself up to so much trouble by check raising here. And we take away some of the stuff that we were saying was so good about this hand. Remember what I was saying? Like, our opponent may often put in at least two barrels. We're taking that away from him. A lot of the time, anyway, right?
Well, Isaac is... Was he in, like, the Tom Dwan, Phil Gelfond crew, or was he not?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. I was wondering, because it's kind of like one of those thought processes of, like, fucking with the dials type of thing, where it's like, this is a board where I should not have that many check raises, and they should be, like, combo draws and jack 8 and ace 8. And other than that, I really don't have that many in my range based on preflop play. So I'm going to do the opposite and actually have all of my top pairs as check raises and fuck with the dials.
Or at least a bunch of them, yeah. That may be so. And maybe also, like you're saying, just because I don't have many at all, like you said, you really can't have jacks, really can't have pocket eights, can't have pocket aces. Ace jack, which may be a three bet most of the time, too. So maybe it's, like you said, jack eight and ace eight. Maybe ace eight sometimes is a three bet.
Yeah.
We just have to find more raises if we're going to be raising our clubs and our straight draws.
Yeah.
And so a pretty good top pair. Maybe this is as good as our aces get.
Yeah, you might three bet ace 10.
So we're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The thing, of course, is one, we take away our opponent's ability to bluff in the future.
Yep.
At least in theory. Anything's possible, but in theory. Two, what's our plan if we get re-raised?
Oh, we're done. We're just done with the hand, obviously.
Well, then I don't love it when this is like, still kind of close to the top of our range in terms of value.
Yeah, but how frequently are we really getting re-raised? That's not happening very often.
I mean, I agree. This is a wetter board. This is a board that's better for our opponent.
Yeah.
In theory, at least. I mean, we do have ace nine here, but still. But that sucks then to take a hand this good and then check raise fold it.
You know? I mean, if Bruno's aware, not aware that we're check raising hands like this, which I would imagine he's not. I wouldn't be expecting Bruno to be aware of that. He's going to think that our check raising range is what we said, right? It's like ace eight, jack eight,
big
combo
draws. Yeah.
So he's not going to have any three bet bluffs because we're not folding any of those to a three bet.
Okay. I think we will have some other things that probably are hands we can fold because you need to have some hands you fold.
Okay. Okay.
Like so we'll have some gut shots.
King 10 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Okay. But the majority of our range is like pretty comfortable against a three bet.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's not going to have that many three bet bluffs.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
And he's not going to have a random three bet bluff, right?
Also, I will say this. This is something that we often talk about this exact spot and talk about, well, what do you do if you get three bet? You don't really in practice get three bet almost ever.
That's what I started
it's
by saying,
so
bro.
It's so rare, Grant.
Yeah, I know.
So Maybe we overthink that. A little bit on the show.
Flop like, 3 bets are extremely rare.
Yeah, so we're always trying to walk down all aspects of the game tree, but maybe we weigh them a little too similarly, as opposed to like, well, the very few times when we get 3 bet, here's what we want to do versus like, what happened? Well, I don't want to do it because I'm when I get 3 bet, it sucks. Like,
right.
I get 3 bet so little, it doesn't really matter. I worry about that later.
I feel like he gets 3 bet like 2 to 5% of the time or something like that.
Like, what's actually 3 betting here? I don't even know if sets are 3 betting. They may wait.
Yeah.
But like,
combo draws,
King 10 of clubs is going to 3 bet probably. Yeah. And fine. And that sort of sucks to lose to that, to like throw our hand over that hand. But they at least have 50% equity.
And then, hands that have a lot of equity against us, and then hands that have us crushed.
Yeah.
And no, there's not going to be random bluffs unless this guy's just a complete maniac. There's no 4 or 5 of diamonds in there.
And Ace Jack really might just put in a big 3 bet.
Yeah.
But that's fine with us.
Yeah. Like,
then we get to throw our hand away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Still, we are taking away the ability of Bruno to bluff in future streets if he has King Deuce of Hearts, you know? Like, why are we taking that away? It just might be a holistic strategy, you know, an overall strategy of more check raises,
which is
cool. I like when people mess with it, you know?
It doesn't even have to be more check raises. It may just be that he did the math and figured out that he needs to be check raising this hand with all the other hands he actually is check raising, just to be balanced with value.
That's true.
I mean, that would be my guess. As opposed to like, I'm just going to check raise a lot more. My guess is if I need to have some gutters in there so I can have some check raise folds, you know, for as true bluffs, because everything else is a call pretty much, then I need to have value on that side, you know, more value. And then that's also a fold I can make since the jack eights I'm probably going to have to call with.
Yep. So you'd expect that would be the end of the hand, but it is a breakdown.
Yeah. So somehow it isn't.
Kind of impressively in the moment, Bruno figures out that he blocks all of Isaac's most likely value and he does 3 bet. Oh, wait. No, that would have been better, though, right? Because he calls with 7-8. Doesn't it seem like 3-betting would be a much better play than calling if you're Bruno? This is actually an interesting 3-bet candidate.
This is a very interesting 3-bet. Okay, first of all, we have the 7 of clubs in our hand, which isn't great.
Yes, that's true.
Number one. We do have the 8 in our hand, which, as you said, it really pointed out. Now, you have to be able to do this in the moment.
Yeah.
But, like, 8x for 8 ace, jack 8, ace 8, right?
Yeah.
Are by far the most likely value hands for Isaac.
Yeah.
The problem is, of course, well, maybe actually having the 7 of clubs is good in this way, now that I think about it, because that means, like, there's less combo draws, right? We take away, like, the 7-9 of clubs.
Yeah.
That's maybe it.
It's okay. 7-10.
7-10, 7-9 of clubs.
Yeah.
That's it, though. But maybe just other club draws. Maybe Isaac once in a while. Could he ever have, like, King 7 of clubs here? Seems unlikely.
Unlikely.
Yeah. Okay, so we take away 2 combos with that 7 of clubs. But that helps a little bit as a hand that might 3-bet us, right? Because that's the hand that might do it.
Like 4-bet us, you mean?
4-bet us, my goodness. But the big combo draws may be like, let's go. You know, like, I want to get it in now when my equity's still reasonable and I have fold equity too, rather than call and, you know, have to take one off and just fold or something.
But it just...
So the eight is interesting, though, as the blocker
to
decide to go with it there.
I think it's the best blocker.
Obviously not go with it, but just turn your hand into a bluff. The question is, what are we trying to bluff out? What do we think is going to fold?
That's a good point.
Because, like, besides the gutters and ace-9... And we probably wouldn't think ace-9 was part of this. Everything else is not folded.
Right, but if we're going to have some bluffs, I think maybe an 8 is the best bluff.
It's funny the way we've talked about this. First, like, how often does he really 3-bet anyway? Yeah. And so that means if he 3-bets, you can fold. We're like, well, but we can't, we should, so we should be 3-betting, but wait, we shouldn't because he's not going to fold.
Well, I mean, I came up with the whole idea that he should be 3-betting, like, right before I said it. So.
Yeah, no, I'm not blaming you for any of it. I think it's an interesting exploration, but it's interesting just like how we've been like bouncing around on both sides of this wall.
Well, I do think he shouldn't have too many 3-bets, but I think if he's going to have 3-bet bluffs, having an 8 with no real equity against Isaac's range is the hand to do it with.
I cannot disagree. That makes a lot of sense to me. Okay. Now, you were saying that you really dislike a call. So do you like a fold better than a call?
Yes.
Why?
Because we aren't doing well against the perceived range at all.
That is true. We're doing very poorly, in fact, right? Even the gutters have overs with the gutter, right?
Like,
in
almost every case. The worst of his perceived hands have us crushed. And by the way, even if we are wrong about the perception, and we are because he has ace-9, that has us in real bad shape, too.
Yeah, we're losing very badly to that. That's
we have to have him have, like, 4 or 5 of clubs and make this play.
Yeah. And actually having a club in our hand also, although we have an 8 in our hand, too, so I guess we block both sides of it, right? And actually having the 7 of clubs, we block less, so... But yeah, even being up against the big combo draw...
It's not good.
It's not great.
Like, he's going to bet the turn a lot, too, and...
Yep.
We're going to call again on, like, a 4?
We're not going to call again. So that's interesting. So, okay. So the re-raise is a question. calling seems bad, so we're just going to bet fold the hand like this because we have no real prospects.
Absolutely. The whole point of the bet was equity denial.
Yes, it was.
We failed. Time to move on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think the second best play is the three bet.
Yeah, I've never thought about that, like in that spot, because we block. We have to understand what the value range is and that, realize that we block it and be like, this is as good as it gets for a bluff.
Yeah, and if Byron has any sets, it's a set of eights.
Correct.
On top of that.
If he has any. He probably doesn't have any.
Yeah.
But even if he did, it's a set of eights, so even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an amazing spot to put in a three bet because of the it's an amazing blocker.
Yeah.
Is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah. I still think a fold is better.
Yeah.
To be clear.
But I do too. Now that we're here, it feels like we're saying, that Isaac's going to continue too much.
Yeah.
And we're in a terrible spot when he does.
So Bruno calls. I'm not a fan of that play.
Okay.
I don't think it's a good idea. Do you have any redeeming qualities to the call that you can think of?
I mean, you know, we're going to bet this board all the time, and mostly with complete misses, and here we actually have something, and it is a wet board. So we're beating draws.
Yeah, but the equity's just not good.
The equity's not good, but we're in position. We get to see what comes on the turn.
Yeah.
You know, like if a bad card comes, we fold. If a great card comes and Isaac bets, we may have to call again.
That sounds like walking down a thorny path there.
Yeah, I agree. It's not easy. And maybe this is one of the hands we actually can fold even on the turn. Like we call with jacks and aces and then figure out the river when we get there, perhaps.
I think we could shed this hand right now and be pretty happy.
Sometimes we improve also, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
But that's my reason for calling if there's going to be a reason. Yeah. It's like, I bet, and I actually have something. So while I'm doing equity denial, I actually have some value too, and I do beat draws on a wet board right now.
Well, every time you do equity denial, you have something.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But I have I don't have pocket deuces here. You know what I mean? I don't have ace high here or king high even. You know, I have
Well, you did your damnedest.
I did my best.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but you're wrong. Anyway, if you want to be right... Nitrogen Sports. Jonathan is just so unhappy.
You asked me to defend.
I know.
You make it sound.
Oh, you don't put me in tough spots on this podcast all the time.
When have I? I challenge you and the listening.
You frequently try to make me seem like an anti-Semite.
That is fine and completely in bounds,
right?
Compared to what you just did,
which is make you have to defend a play that we marginally dislike.
Yeah, but then you said I was wrong, as if it was my idea from the beginning, and I solicited that instead of you solicited it,
right?
And that's worse,
of course,
than me accusing you of being quite fairly, by the way, an anti-Semite.
Thanks.
Quite accurately.
Thanks for doing it again.
What? You brought it up.
You're such a jerk.
You just gotta turn it around on people. That's how you do. You just always turn it around.
Yeah, congratulations. That's how you make friends, huh?
Whatever.
Look at you, alone in your ivory castle. Nobody left to berate.
Ivory castle? You mean ivory tower?
Whatever. You can make a castle out of ivory.
The anti-Semites always say castle.
It's a classic tell, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Nitrogen Sports is the sponsor.
Buy Nitrogen.
Yeah, say some stuff about that.
Yeah, okay, I will. Hey, they're an online poker site as well as casino games and sports betting. They've got really big limits for the sports betting too, that you can bet on everything there. The poker's awesome. They have a monthly Poker Guys Invitational Tournament where if you sign up using the link in the description of this podcast, you get to play in that, otherwise you can't. And there's always a massive overlay. They give away thousands of dollars every single month. They cap the player pool, so they just stick all this extra money in there. It's kind of amazing. Plus, it's a Bitcoin-only poker site, which means you get your money in and out fast. 90 minutes from when you request a withdrawal to when you get it, almost always, way faster than those other guys.
Nice. That was like an insurance commercial or a car commercial where they refer to the other guys.
Yeah. It's like flow.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the other guys. They don't have... Well, they do have a lot of quirky mascots because that's how you sell insurance because it's all the same. Yep. Anyway, moving on.
Indeed.
Heading to the turn.
Okay.
We now have, after the check raise and call, which somehow happened on that flop with those hands. Again, Baron has ace nine on the ace eight jack two club board, and Bruno has 7-8. Nobody has a club draw or anything.
Yeah, whack.
$2 million in the pot. The turn is the king of spades. Does not affect either hand. Could affect some of the hands that these players are representing.
Is it possible Bruno also called the flop check raise because he has a club in his hand? He thinks if another club comes, that gives him some opportunities to steal the pot.
I mean, why would you do that when Baron could easily have a draw himself?
Of course, but I'm saying, like, having a club, we block that a little bit. There may be some value to that down the road.
Yeah, I guess.
It's marginal, clearly.
That's ambitious.
I'm just wondering. Anyway, yeah. Go on.
King of spades.
Okay.
So
not a club. Queen 10 comes in, though. Queen 10 is the queen most 10, obvious thing.
I guess Baron could have queen 10.
Either player can have queen 10.
Either player can probably have queen 10.
It's a double gutter on the flop.
Oh, it's double gutter. You're right. Bruno could have king jack, probably.
Absolutely, he can.
I don't think Baron could have king jack too frequently, but I guess he has ace 9, so maybe, but
I wouldn't count on it, though. Yeah. It feels like that's such a clear call. Although, we all would have thought ace 9 was a clear call, too.
All of us in this room, all the 70 people.
Well, the three of us, you, me, and the very large space-taking...
ghost?
Well, apparition.
Yeah.
They prefer to be called apparitions.
You know, the thing about the movies is they lie. Like, this ghost is quite friendly and happy to have us around.
Yeah.
You know?
But don't call him Casper.
His name's not Casper.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's derogatory.
That's what I'm saying.
Do you think you have to say that to me?
I'm saying it to everyone, but yes, to you, because you call him Casper.
No, I don't.
When he's not around?
Shut up.
Grant actually just looked around as if the ghost was paying attention or not, as if you guys could see that.
It doesn't matter. It's for the... You make a better product if you commit.
No, I agree.
You should know this, Levy. You went to theater school. Of course you did, by the way.
I did not go to theater school. I just
majored in theater.
I just majored in theater, yeah. In school, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a theater school. It wasn't like, you know, the fame school or anything like that.
Plays about sadness and shit. I don't know.
Basically. I enjoyed that. Anyway.
Theater school. Anyway. $2 million in the pot. Turns king of spades. All right. What do you do now if you're Isaac Baron? It's kind of weird. We've put ourselves in a weird position.
Okay. Well, the king shouldn't change too much, right? Like, of course, we were already losing ace king. King jack comes in.
Yeah.
Queen 10 comes in.
Yeah.
That's it, right? I guess king 8, but we wouldn't really think about king 8.
We wouldn't, but I guess Bruno would probably have played it this way.
It seems like king 8 could be there, but we wouldn't. But king jack and queen 10 are the only things.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we've been called, and this sort of goes back to some of the problems with this spot, is what are we doing? Are we betting for value, trying to get value out of a worse ace? I guess so.
I mean, we're just hoping our ace plays on the river at that point.
Our nine, yeah. Yeah, right now it does, though.
Yeah.
And certainly our opponent can have worse aces here. So trying to get value out of that makes sense to me. Because otherwise we're going to check and try and induce bluffs, right? Because otherwise it's going to go check a lot. And what bluffs does our opponent have? Clubs, I guess.
Yeah, clubs.
That's the most. I guess 9-10 is a straight draw.
We
have a 9, though.
Could turn a king into a bluff, which would be unlikely.
King queen?
Yeah, king 10. Queen or king 10.
Yeah, could, but doesn't have to a lot.
Yeah.
With the clubs missing and stuff like that, and the straight draws. Like,
it's just a weird spot, and it's not a spot that either of us are accustomed to, because we wouldn't have played. We'd be hard-pressed to find a spot where we would raise ace 9 on a board like this.
Right, and so it's a very odd place to be now for Isaac. I don't know for him, but
maybe he knows the spot. Yeah,
he probably does. But I would think like this is very strange. And I feel like I see amateurs make plays like this a lot where they check raise and get called and have no idea where they are.
Yeah.
And like they check and they hope no more money goes in. And it's like, well, why did you check raise then? Like there would have that much money would have gotten in anyway against, you know, when your opponent has anything or they're giving him a chance to bluff. But this is Isaac Baron. Obviously he's not playing it that way.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, good player.
Right.
And he's gonna check.
Right.
So I guess he's hoping to give the draws a chance to bluff. He also doesn't want to get bluffed himself.
Right.
In a way that would make him fold. So if he bets and gets raised, then you would think, I'm going to have to fold now. But
as Isaac, are we basically committed to putting in two more streets of value on safe runouts?
I think we might be, yeah.
Like, if a club comes, that's really different.
We're done on a club, yeah.
Yeah, and if I guess another straight card comes, we may have to, like, if a queen comes now, and that means a 10 is a straight, we may have to fold if he puts in a big bet. We have to consider it, at least. Most of the time, I think we would fold, right? But, like, if it comes 4-4 or something like that, or then, actually, it's not even as good there. 4-5, maybe, where our 9 still plays. That's the best. We'll call, of course, if it comes 4-4 also. Okay, so we're going to do that. So this is weird. So we checked... We check raised, we got called, and now we're like, let's go back to inducing / some level of pot control.
Yep.
The problem is there isn't that much pot control we can do, right? Like, based on stack sizes at this point.
Well, I mean, by checking, we can catch bluffs rather than get bluffed by betting and getting raised.
That is the best part of this. I mean, we're not in game theory disaster mode. I think a worse ace might call a turn bet.
They might,
I would expect so. Heads up and all that. But the worst ace, we can certainly get one more street of value against a worse ace anyway.
Yeah.
Assuming a non-scary card comes on the river. Mm-hmm. We're giving up that, though, when a club comes, it might go check, check. Anyway, I certainly understand why he would check once he's here.
Yeah, it feels natural.
It feels really rough to bet with this hand in this spot, right?
So he checks.
Okay.
As Bruno, do we now decide that, oh, Isaac checked, so I guess he actually has something. I have to bluff?
Well, King 10 of clubs, for example, just took the lead.
Yeah.
Are we going to get King 10 of clubs to fold if we bet?
No.
How in the world are we going to do that?
No.
What are we going to get to fold that check raise that we're losing to right now?
It's hard to think of things.
I'm really struggling to think of it.
Because most of them you would think would have clubs in them.
Even if it was King X of clubs and Isaac was raising more flush draws, well, okay, he's still not folding. Like, we have to go bet now to get him to fold that stuff, which we could decide to do, but now that's crazy high variance when we actually do have a pair. Once in a while, we're ahead here.
Yeah.
Not that often, admittedly.
I don't think it's too often when Isaac checks the turn.
I know.
Like, the argument for betting is that we're almost definitely behind.
This is one of the, goes back to the whole thing of, like, why calling the flop with 8-9 isn't super great, because when Isaac bets, we probably are always going to fold.
7-8.
When he bets, we're pretty much always going to fold, and when he checks, we're almost always behind.
Yeah.
So, like, what good can come out of this unless we improve, which is not going to happen very often.
No.
And we might be drawing almost dead or dead anyway.
We are drawing pretty thin against Isaac's actual hand.
We are. Well, you know, we got 5 outs.
Yeah, that's pretty thin.
It's pretty thin.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do now that we're here? We're as played, right? Like, we don't love the call, but whatever. We're here now. It's been checked to us. Can we fold out enough of Isaac's range that it's worth taking a shot? Or do we want to have a multi-street plan where we go bet, or do we just want to pack it in?
I think my initial thought process is to pack it in. I think if we're to bet, it has to be a multi-street plan. It has to be targeting the combo draws that turned into a pair or had a pair on the flop, like Jack X of clubs.
I think, the King X of clubs, Jack X of clubs is exactly what we're targeting if we go for this.
So we're not expecting them to fold the turn. We have to go for it on the river, unless a club comes or a king or a jack.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So we can have Queen 10.
Yeah.
You would almost always bet Queen 10 right now, right? So we don't block the nuts, though, or anything, but whatever. Still, it's unlikely Isaac wouldn't bet the nuts himself if they came in.
So I think packing it in is the best play, but if we're going to bet, we have to bet again, unless the club comes or king or jack.
And the truth is, if we're calling the flop, we're calling partially to take these shots, right? Because otherwise, what the hell are we doing at all?
Yep.
So with that in mind, too, again, this is an as-played spot, really, because like we're here, so what are we going to do is the better question to answer. But also, cognitively, it makes sense to like go for it now, even if it's going to be multi-street.
Yep.
So I think I like that. I think we should take a shot since we're here and we're sort of forced to.
Well, we could also pack it in.
We could just pack it in. We do have a pair. Like, almost never going to get to showdown if we're good, though.
No. Bruno takes a shot.
Okay.
I don't blame him for it.
No.
Bets 1.35 into 2.
It's big.
Yeah.
Really big.
And I don't think you can fold as Baron has played.
No way.
Like, you check raised and you checked and you have top pair. You just have to call.
We're heads up. I mean, the ranges are start off so wide. It isn't like this is a under the gun plus one who opened and now is doing this, right? And we're checking too after we called in the big blind and check raise. It's really different.
Yep.
We have to call.
Yep. So he does. Pot's big now. 4.725 million. Bruno's got 5.2 remaining as the effective stack.
Okay. Fine with me, man.
I'm going to go ahead and find out what the river was, because I failed to write that down, of course. It's the 9 of hearts. That's an important river.
Oh, Isaac Baron makes 2 pair.
Yeah.
Ace is up, baby. That's pretty good.
Is there an argument for just leading all in?
I mean, what are we hoping to get called by as Isaac?
A weaker 2 pair that might check back or bet small.
Which 2 pair is that?
I don't know. I just said the words.
Okay.
I don't really believe in the idea.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a great idea, right? Like, our opponent has a lot of club bluffs, for example. We don't have any clubs in our hand.
Yep.
If there's any chance at all that he's going to go for it on those club bluffs, we should give him that chance.
I agree.
Our hand is very good, but like we also may get like a pretty good ace. Let's say our opponent has ace 10. Mm-hmm. Volkman has ace 10 here. And we check, raise, check, call big, and then shove river ourselves. Lead shove river.
Yeah, he's probably just folding.
That's a really tough spot.
Yeah.
For him, when he might fold. Like, what a disaster.
Yeah.
But he might, he's probably, he might bet ace 10 if we check. I don't know if he is or not, but he might.
I think checking is better.
I think checking is better.
Keeps the bluffs live.
We want to let the clubs take a shot at us.
Or the 7-8s, I guess.
Apparently the 7-8s.
Baron checks again.
By the way, also, if we're up against a better hand, they may not shove. They may bet half pot. And we only have to lose half pot this way.
True. Baron checks again.
Good.
Now with a much stronger hand. All right.
Here we are.
We said it had to be a multi-street plan.
It's a multi-street plan. Let's do this.
So the question is, what's best? Is it to move in or to bet smaller? Because it's more than pot if we move in.
I don't think we need to move in if we're trying to fold out a king or a jack.
Right. That's the target. Because we're still targeting king X of clubs or jack X of clubs.
Right. That's it.
Those
right.
seem like the hands that make the most sense for Baron to play this way if you don't know that he's check-raising hands like ace nine.
Yep. I mean, everything else is definitely calling. Everything else is like jack eight or better, right?
Yeah.
And like, those hands are probably calling us if we shove anyway. We put in a really big bet, yeah. right? So I don't know that there's any value in doing that. Let's go smaller. Let's bet an amount that folds out the king X of clubs. What's that amount?
2.1 million, something like that.
Yeah, there's 4.7 in there. There's no way he's going to call after we call the check raise bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if he does, congratulations. Like, that's a great call.
Yeah.
That's super hard. I like that a lot.
I mean, you're not really supposed to be calling with king X or jack X of clubs because you block the things you want Bruno to have.
Right.
Which are clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, Isaac would be very aware that he gets here with a lot better hands than that, too.
Yeah.
Like these are the worst hands he gets here with.
Yeah.
He's going to fold those. Yeah. Let's bet like 2 million.
Yeah. Bruno goes all in.
Well, so is he targeting anything else that we're not talking about to fold, maybe?
Jack 8?
Will Jack 8 fold?
I don't know.
Would you fold Jack 8? I mean, we are losing to a bunch of stuff. We're losing to all the value.
Yeah, but I probably still don't fold if I check twice.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is probably very aggressive, Bruno. Like, as we see, he's taking a very aggressive line here. I don't think against that type of player, you can check raise and then check twice with a hand that's strong and fold.
I think you're right.
When the draw is missed. 7-10 got there, but queen 10 got there on the turn and 7-10 got there on the river, but that's not enough.
No way is that enough, right? So we're like, yeah, sometimes you have ace king, sometimes you have. Would king jack shove the river?
Maybe.
Maybe. It might. It actually might, right?
Yeah.
Because it may think ace is up is going to play slightly differently. Yeah. Yeah, it probably would think ace is up is almost never going to be there.
Yeah.
Turns out it is.
It is.
It got there really weirdly.
Which is, by the way, a great reason for Ike to call.
Yes.
Like, king jack might shove for value, plus he could have a bluff. We kind of have to call now that we've made two pair.
Our hand is way too good to fold, and we can beat at least a little bit of value.
Yep.
That's pretty great. I don't think Volkman is ever shoving, like, ace queen for value.
I would not expect that.
That would be super thin.
Yeah.
He needs what, ace seven to call him?
Yeah.
That's the next, or I guess ace 10.
Yeah.
But Isaac probably doesn't have very much ace 10 just from preflop, let alone anything else.
And the flop.
And the flop, right. But since he has ace 9, I guess he can have ace 10.
Yeah. Based on the flop alone, if you're not putting him on a one pair ace, you can't really bet ace queen for value.
Yeah, I think you're right. You could bet tiny, of course.
Yeah.
You bet small, but you can't bet big.
Yeah.
So that also was nice to bet your 2 million, because we probably could bet ace queen for 2 million.
Maybe
try and get called, quote, by a king.
Yeah.
Probably actually fold it out, but that's fine. And bet worse aces if Isaac has any, which maybe he does based on the way he played ace nine.
And crucially, we get to preserve our stack. We'd still have over 20 bigs.
That's the beautiful thing about this play is we get all those things working at this. We pretty much keep the same fold equity and don't blow up our stack every time we get called.
Yep. But Bruno blew up his stack.
Bruno decides to really go for it instead.
Because Isaac has a hand that he just decides he has to call with, even though he's probably not beating most of the value, even though he might be beating king jack specifically.
King jack, jack, what's the river? Jack nine? Gugh. Hard to come up with much. And
hard to imagine Bruno betting jack nine on the turn.
Yeah. Jack nine of clubs. That's it.
Yeah.
But that's it. And he doesn't even have to bet that. He may choose not to bet that.
Yeah.
In fact, he probably wouldn't bet that now that I think about it. Like, there's two overcards. You got check raised. Why do you have to bet that?
On the turn, you mean?
Yeah, on the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we just have to call. This hand is way too strong.
And so does Isaac, and that's how he wins the tournament.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Tournament over. 412K.
So, yeah, that was a pretty big mistake by Bruno to bet so much. He could have had 3.2 million still pretty easily.
Still a massive dog at that point, but he's got a shot.
Massive dog against a great, great, very accomplished player, but it's no limit hold'em. Anything can freaking happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting hand.
Yeah, for sure.
Poltergeist of a hand.
Right.
Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make it home.